Gemara,
well, it's actually completely irrelevant
in the first sip of Kofei Ches. We'll see a bit of how irrelevant, but the Gemara tells us that there are really only four shades of red. There's some other borderline shades, but let's say four shades of red. That color is Tamei Ketzdam, and to that, the Chachamim added a fifth, which is black, because black is Adom Elisha Laka. It's just I'm not sure exactly what Laka means, but some graded form of red blood turns black. We're not sure exactly their theories, what that means. So there's a lot of Nikias involved in the time of Chazal in figuring out exactly what these four shades of red are, and there's a lot of discussion in the Gemara about maybe Tulsa and sleep, about borderline shades, and in the Rishonim about that in-between shades, what's the relationship between these shades, about all the details. Interestingly, the Minchas Sinai has a very fascinating discussion. Why are only these four shades of red Tamei, and other shades are Tahar? The Chinuch says something which I don't think we would have thought at first. The Chinuch says, because only these four shades could be Damnida. Any other shade of red couldn't have come from the Makor. Pashtus, I don't think most people assume that. The Chinuch says, no, Pashtus is just there is a custom that these shades are Tamei, and other shades aren't Tamei. The Chinuch says, because if it's not one of these four shades of red, Gloy Milta, it's not from the Makor, it's from a Makor or some other place. It's just not from there at all. Well, the Minchas Chinuch says, no. It's not a Gloy Milta that it wasn't menstruation. Even if it was menstruation, it's a Xeris Akasim that certain colors are Tamei and certain colors are Tahor. I think most people assume, like the Minchas Chinuch, it's just a Xeris Akasim that certain colors are Tamei and certain colors are Tahor. It doesn't really matter scientifically, you know, where it came from, I think. But in any case, none of that matters anymore because the Gemara and Daf Chaf already. Yeah? It could be not green and Khalami. And I think we'd assume that it's Xeris Akasim and it's Tahor, I think. Oh, really? Did this happen?
And
I don't know. Where'd you see this?
In the Pisre Chubos.
Okay. Anyway, I guess this is just the machlokes in the chinuch and the minchas chinuch. That could be an interesting nafkamina. What if you can prove that this is regular dam, it's just color got changed for some other reason? The minchas chinuch would say xeris akasav still depends on the color, while the chinuch himself would say no, it's all just an igloi milsa of what kind of dam it is biologically. And if you know it's biologically dam nida, then it's also that would be a very nice nafkamina. Now, in the time of Chazal, this made a big difference. There were different shades of red. Kayadua, the Machaber starts off telling us that already in the time of Chazal, there were many Amoraim who refused to paskin shilas of Dam Nida because they lost their bekias. They didn't feel they had enough bekias in the exact shades of red. So all the Rishonim, not all the Rishonim, plenty of Rishonim just quote the Gemara, the Rambam, etc. But most Rishonim say if some of the Amoraim didn't have bekias, then Kavah Chomer, all of us don't have the keys. So we assume nowadays there's one Rav in Harnof who still holds that he still has the keys, and he'll paskin whether it's a Tomei shade of red or a Tahor shade of red, like in the Gemara, and like the Rambam seems to say. But that's really beyond the pale of normal shitas. Nowadays we don't have the keys, and we can't distinguish between shades of red, which is why the Shulchan Aruch paskins Kol Mari Adom Bein Emukeya Harbe O Amuk Temeim V'chein Kol Mari Shachar V'ein Tar Ela Mari Lava. Okay, it says all reds, doesn't matter what shade of red it is, doesn't matter if it's a deep red, if it's a dark red, whatever kind of red it is, all reds are tummy, and likewise all blacks are tummy because we don't have bikias. Yes.
How can this rabbi go against the Shulchan Aruch?
No, it's not the first time. He's unique. Elamari, Ve'in Tahor Elamari, Lovin. So what colors are still left to be Tahor? White is Tahor. Ve'chein Mari, Yorok, and Yorok is Tahor. Yorok is Machlok, Zanon, Tinakamim, Malal, Machachamim, but we, Machor, we'll come back to it. But Machor, we pass the Darapash that Yorok is Tahor. What does Yorok mean? So it's funny, someone once explained to me that colors are very cultural. There's nothing objective about them. What's the different shade of the same color? What's the gamri different color? Has no scientific basis. It's just a matter of your culture tells you. So our culture tells us that blue and green and yellow are different colors, not shades of the same color. But in the time of Chazal, blue, green, and yellow were just shades of yarok. That sounds strange to us, but there's no good reason for it. So yarok, what does yarok mean? That's Tahar. So they're going to say the yarok that could border on red is Tahar. Afil kumari ashava or zahav, even wax or gold, and gold could really start to border on red. Even wax or gold, which we would call shades of yellow, yellow is Tahar. But kolshkin or yarok yikarki, because something for sure, green is Tahar. And the Rama adds, v'chein mari shakorin b'loshan ashkenaz, blue v'chal yoroku, and likewise blue. All three types of yarok, blue, green, and yellow, are all Tahar. Okay, we'll finish it in a few moments. Now this sounds very, very pashat. I know there's some people out there, someone told me this is what Shefter says. Colors are very pashat. Anything that's reddish is Tameh, anything that isn't is Tahar. Why do you need such long discussions? But our Masorah nowadays, interestingly enough, is that the Shulchan Aruch is trying to simplify things. In the old days, in the time of Chazal, it was very complex. You had to know exactly what color was what and exactly what red was what. You had to get Shemush to be makered very well. But now we don't have a kiyah, so we just make an easy rule that anyone can figure out without any Shemush, without any details, without any achronim. Say all reds and blacks are Tameh, and all whites, yellows, greens, and blues are Tahar. But Lemaisa, it's not quite so simple. And the situation we're in is not that it's simpler than the time of Chazal. It's just more machmir than time of Chazal, to be on the safe side. We still have a lot of discussion about every particular shade, whether that is any reddish shade or that's not any reddish shade. And you still need a lot of bakiyas to figure out exactly what it is, and you need shemush, and you need mesorah for this. It's just that we also need a lot of bakiyas. It's just that instead of taking our chances with which is the color red that's telling me which isn't, our bakiyas just tell what's at all reddish what it is. Anything that's at all reddish is Tameh, but you still need bakiyas and mesorah because it's very hard to draw the line as to what's at all reddish and what isn't.
You're contrasting this to Shefter?
Yeah.
Because Shefter thinks that...
Someone told me, he said it's very simple. You don't need any bakiyas. Either something's reddish or it isn't. No. I don't know if that's true. And any Talmidim can confirm this. So, let's go through some of the details. Lo mishaneh though. Lemaisa, there's a lot of discussion about what shades are considered any shade of red and what shades are considered not a shade of red at all. And there's a lot of bakiyas necessary for practical shemush as to exactly what color is what. So to work to some of these colors, l'chora, red is never pashut. Any red at all is tameh. Pashut, that includes pink. Now there's, when it comes to colors, this is a tricky thing because there's such a lack of detail in the Shulchan Aruch here. He tells us so little. Usually the Shulchan Aruch tells us a lot more than the Gemara. There are a few details. By the time you get to the Shulchan Aruch, it's been developed, that they've covered all the cases, etc. Here, the Shulchan Aruch has all the details. The Gemara has all the details. Shulchan Aruch tells us very simply. What happens is, there's a lot of divergence, this man is as to how to interpret the Shulchan Aruch. What's considered komari, any shade of red, and what's considered not a shade of red. So, when it comes to colors of Nanazeh, even within normal people, there's a wide divergence. And you can't say, like, what color everyone would say is Tahor or everyone would say is Tameh. It is a tremendous machlokas, and there are people on all sides of the spectrum who will be metame or retire any color. We'll try to get sort of a mainstream approach, but Lemaisa, there are people who will have different sheets about everything. And, you know, if you hold from Eilevel to Rilkim Chayim, then it might not be... it might not be unreasonable, the big shas ad chak, that you would send someone to ask a shayla from someone who has kulas on certain colors. If really a little different klim chayim, then there might be justification for that. But at least in normal circumstances, so in abnormal circumstances, there's a range of shitas that might have to be taken into account. But in normal circumstances, A nice summary, by the way. I noticed we're enforced. He has a nice summary of a lot of things, even though it's in English. He has a nice summary of all the different chronim. He collects them all, much more so than I've seen in some of the other svarim, about all the different sheets in the different colors. Reds, pinks, lechor is a red. There are a few minority sheets there who want to say there's different kinds of pink, but pashas, pink is a red. Pink, red is out of the question.
Not to say most circumstances, then what? One should go to one's normal voting.
No, we should pass by the mainstream. What is the mainstream? I'll tell you. Normally, the rule is us say lechorav.
Right, let's hear it in a circumstance where you're not near your regular rav.
So you ask a different rav, same as any other shayla.
How does that work if you live in the Sarah?
So I think there's a difference between a balabas who asks the local rav. So a balabas asks the local rav, and then they find themselves on vacation in Hawaii. They ask the local rav in Hawaii. It's not their problem to figure out, you know, why the rav is posking what he's posking. The Talmud, who's Rebbe, has a certain Masorah, should follow that Masorah and, you know, should consider himself bound by that Masorah. And I guess shouldn't rely on the local rav in Hawaii. Should tell the local rav in Hawaii, my Masorah is this. And if he says, okay, in that case, do what you want, then zehu. Same as every other area of halacha. Except for the fact that normally you can call someone. Okay, Vaikin. Let's just list a few of the colors that the poskim can deal with and what they say about it. Reds and blacks are obvious. When it comes to yarok, even though it's pasha to the shulchan aruch, and the chora, let me just... point out, red, lechora pink is a red, lechora orange is also a red. There are those who are making an orange, it doesn't really happen that much. But pashtas, pinks, and oranges are reds, and it's really minority shitas who are making on that. Black obviously is tame. The question is, what about different shades of black? What about a light black? Light black lechor is what we call dark gray, to the best of my knowledge, at least so far, let's assume. So there is a big discussion of light black in the Achronim. However, Pashas the Mechaber says, kol mari shachar, what does kol mean? He said earlier, whether deeper or you know, light, lechor, you meant whether light or darker. Lechor, even a light black, is mostly Achronim Paskin. Even a light black, even a sort of, I guess, dark gray, is, according to the Mechaber, within kol mare shachar, and therefore would have to be usher as well.
It seems strange because I thought black was a dried red. The dark gray would not be a dried red.
I'm not sure. We'll get to that. Yeah, I'm not sure. Now, what about a very light gray? So lechora, very light gray, is what the shach is discussing. It's a cut and base. He says white, even if it's ainu lovin legamri lekamari beged lovin shenafu off avak shehucha lovni nuso tahar. Even if it's like a white garment that got a little dirty, that's not so white. That's also tahar. Lechora, that is a light gray. A light gray is a white. Tzitzis is not. You see, I'm not sure. Tzitzis is not white that got a little dust on it. Tzitzis, that's the color. It's cream. If you have white with a little dust on it, what does that look like? What?
The white shirt that guy's worn 37 years.
You wore all week.
I don't know, in Brooklyn, the shoes guys don't do that. It's dirty. Hucha lovni nuso. I don't think he means cream. Cream is a yarok. Cream is a yellow. I mean, is a yellow. I think what he means here is a very light gray, and that the shop is saying that's a kind of white. That's not within any type of a very light, I guess, gray or brown, a dirty white. That's a kind of white, and that's not a problem. What about a mamish gray? So that's, you know, real regular gray. So that's a big discussion, the darkei tshuva here. By the way, the notes again on the page of the Shulchan Aruch don't get into all the details here of every single color. the Dark Echuma, among those who comment in the order of the Shulchan Aruch, has long discussions, reading down listless to Poskim for everything. He has a big machlokas as whether a light gray, sorry, regular gray, is considered light black or not. If it's a light black, if gray is a light black, then any mara of black were machmir. But if gray is a gray, then we're not machmir on it. So that is a big machlokas. A poskim, he quotes, the Darkei Tshuva in the end says that most poskim assume that a regular gray is a light black. And therefore, star, as I'll explain in a moment, a regular gray is a light black. That the Darkei Tshuva assumes, even though he quotes the Shiri Tara and a few other posts from Mako, he assumes gray is a light black. however, and I asked Rabbi Willig about this once, he says we can't be Mako on gray. Gray is a light black. However, he says that's in theory. In practice, women should never see a gray. And if a woman, if you do see a gray, it's probably not for the woman's body at all, and you should be ma'ayin to see, to be moderate, you know, if at all possible, which it should be possible logically, based on the fact that it's not really for her body at all, it's a foreign object. So gray, you're hardly ever going to see. If you do see it, it's probably a foreign object, which is the star, and obviously you have to then go with the rules of Tliya, ancient abundant, et cetera, which we'll get to, but it's not a natural color. Black is a natural color. Red is a natural color. White is a natural color. But yellow is a natural color. But gray is not a natural color. Even though, theoretically, we'd have to be machmir. Then we get to the issue of yarok. The Shulchan Aruch paskins as a davar pashut, that yarok, which means, I guess, the range of yellows, right? The range of yellows is tahar. However, that's not universal. The Pitzchei Tshuva in Sifkaton Beis quotes from the Maharshal that the Maharshal mints asered yarok. Therefore, he says not only a golden yarok, which is a darker yarok, even a wax yarok. Says you shouldn't, there is Marshal Paskin, it also goes to Mishlah, it's more famous name than Marshal. Well, Marshal, you shouldn't be Makel so much in yellow. You shouldn't be Makel in yellow unless there are other sudden Mahakra, you have to be Mahakra in yellow. The Sidrei Tara, also quoted in this Pesachuva, says maybe even Al Tisa Bal Nefesh should be Mahakra. Where Moshe finds he's a big Chomer in Yorok, which they call, I think in Yiddish, it's Gel, for like gold or something, has a big Kiddush in Yorok, where Moshe Feinstein says, for the Pesach Tara and first 3 days of Shiva Nekiyam, we're Machra on Yarok. Now again, I assume by the Yarok you mean the golden Yarok, not a, you know, pale cream Yarok. But that's a big Chomer of Moshe Feinstein based on this Marshal and Shlon and Marim. Mints, even though it's a Machlokas Tanarim, we pass like the Chum, it seems to be.
It's yellow, not green.
See, really agree, yellow. Seems to be. seems to be pretty Pashut, but there are those who are Machmir on at least a golden yarok. He says maybe even a wax yarok. The Mara mints in the post-mode here, but Moshe Feinstein says in the first 3 days we're machmir on yarok. That is a very big chumrah. The minhag olam is not like that. The minhag olam is to be makel on yarok le-gamre. The minhag olam is to be makel on yarok le-gamre, not like Moshe Feinstein's shara, and assume that all yarok, like the Shulchan Aruch says, all yarok is that all yarok is tahar, but there are those who are machmir legamri unless there are other sudden lahakel. And Moshe is machmir for hefzik tahar the first 3 days, big chumra, but lemais of the minhag olam is not to be choshish for that. Of course, the most interesting color again, blues and greens, to the best of my knowledge, don't happen that often anyway. But if they did, they'd be tahar. The most interesting color, of course, is brown. Now, brown is a mystery, because brown is the color you find. And it can't be that the Shulchan Aruch didn't tell us the din of brown. If you ask, why didn't he tell us the din of some weird color, because it never happens. But it can't be he didn't tell us the din of brown. Brown is a very, very common color. So Avadi told us that it's brown. The only problem is we English speakers think there's brown. Brown is distinct from these other colors. It's brown. How come the Shulchan Aruch left out brown? The answer is obvious. The Shulchan Aruch didn't leave out brown. He told us that it's brown. Brown is included in one of the colors he mentioned. The only tricky part is which color is it included in? What are the obvious two candidates?
Black or yellow.
Black or yellow. Either brown is a dark yellow, which makes a lot of sense to be smart. You think about yellow, there's like cream, there's esrog, there's gold, and you know, a little further in the range, you get regular old-fashioned brown.
Really, but brown is actually a combination of blue, yellow, and red. If you look at that brown right here, you can see it. Blue, yellow, and red is what brown is.
If they didn't know that, then I don't have to know it. Or you could say, brown is a light black. The truth is actually interesting. Someone told me that if you take Coke and you pour only a little in a cup and you look at it, it'll be brown. If you pour a lot in a cup, it'll be black.
We learned that last year.
Some people want to use that as sort of a cool on black, which is going a little far.
No, the Yerushalmi use it on like not a black, like a lighter black.
Right, and this Coke might be a lighter black than Mamish.
They say it's not black. It's the bruta.
Yeah, that's that's.
The right thing is
the
black.
Same with haircut, the more hair someone has, will change the brown.
Anyway, yeah, Lemaisa, but maybe brown is just a light black. So the Shulchan Aruch said all shades of black, including brown. There is a fascinating third theory, which I saw once someone wrote a whole article about it. But I forget where I saw it. Rabbi Willard told me he thought he heard Rabbi Iyer made this suggestion. Some people say brown is a shade of red. So it's already covered. Any shade of red, call Mari Adam. Brown is just a shade of red. That would have very fascinating implications. Maybe a brown cow is a part of Duma, etc., which is exactly the theory that many people had. No, there's a theory out there that I've read that a part of Duma is actually a brown cow. If you say, aren't all half the cows brown? No, but they all have two hairs of a different color. Anyway, Nunu, that's a far-out theory that brown is a shade of red, although you can see it, like brown could be called a shade of red, depending on how you chose to look at things. Most people assume, no, either brown is a black or brown is a yellow. And it might not be so crazy to say brown is a blue. Say brown is a black, because what's the cop of black? Black is a red that was locked off, that was somehow degraded and turned into a different color than its natural color. It actually could be sometimes that when red oxidizes, certainly in the presence of some other chemicals, it's scientifically possible that red can sometimes oxidize into brown. So that might be, maybe that's what Chazal meant, that black, including brown, is a type of red. So both those theories are possible. Obviously, Shrenda's not Kamina. If brown is a black, then that's a big Chumra. If brown is a yellow, then that's a big Kula. On the page of the Shulchan Aruch here, I think we only get one side of the coin. The first Gilead Marasha says, Dam Yorok brown. See, he's already, the first Gilead Marasha says, first is Rish Rabba, Yorok Tanisha, Rikim Zah, fine, Haran Chosnida. The Dam Yorok brown. What about the kind of Yorok which we call brown? So we see where he's going already, which says, what is brown? Right now, the Achronim are very smart. They're like, if they tell us brown, what if in 100 years someone doesn't know what they meant by brown? So he tells us what brown is. Brown is always used by two examples, coffee and chestnuts. Mariach, coffee va'armonim. Brown like coffee. Brown like coffee and chestnuts. What about brown? So he says, I feel b'vdiki yesh l'haka l'ayin shuvitz yaveh. It's supposed to shuvitz yaveh. Even if it's a b'vdika, not just a kesa, you can make it on brown. Brown is a kind of yorub. He's very clear on that. We see the same daya in the 1 second. There it is. In the Pesach Tshuva, the end of Sukkot and Aleph, I am the Sidrei Tarav, Shem Atzati Kotzav, Shadam and Notel, Etzeva, Brown, Shukain, Klipas, Harmonim, Komashki, Akopi, Shu Tahor, Vein Tzor Chlomer, Bekesem, Bedikas Tar, certainly Bekesem, so the Sidrei Tarav, the Shelos Yavetz, the Gilead Marasha, all hold that brown is just a type of, it's a very dark yellow. But it's Pashto Shulchan Aruch covered, he says all yellows are Tahar. That's a little funny, why use the example of gold, why didn't he teach us the Chiddush of yellow like chestnuts and coffee? I don't know if they had chestnuts and coffee in the time of the Rishonim, but something else. But okay, certainly, and a lot of posts can agree that brown is a type of yellow. The Achachos Adam passes that way. The Orach HaShulchan passes that way. Ramosha also passes that way, except that he's machmer a little on yellow, so it doesn't end up being so glad. The Orach HaShulchan even says Chalila Lahachmer on brown. It's a Chalila Lahachmer if you piece it on brown, which is a very strong lashon, which some of the later poskim say might be a bit of an exaggerated lashon. However, in the Darkei Tshuva here, they quote lots of Sidri Tara, Shevas Yavetz, the Gilyon Maharsha, the Aruch HaShulchan, you could go list forever, just some famous ones, the Chachmas Adam. However, the Darkei Tshuva here quotes a whole bunch of Achronim for Machmer, who say brown is Tamei, brown is a shade of black. The Darkei Tshuva right here quotes from the Sipsei Chacham and the Beit Shlomo,
not quite as famous, and the Lechem is similar, also Paskins like that.
The Lechem is similar, you can see it's on the shelf. It's the Hilchos Nida by the Baal Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He also Paskins that brown is Tamei. The Darkei Tshuva quotes some other Achronim who want to make a Pshara, say if it's a Kesem, we can be Megal. But if it's a Re'iyah, which normally means if it's on a Bedika, then we have to be Machmer. There are some people say, well, you went your Bekeskes Toman in a Hepsik Tara, we should be Machmer. But otherwise, we can be Mekel. Ramosha Feinstein would say in the first 3 days be Machmer, like all Yoruk. And after that, be Mekel. There's a lot of different deos here. Halacha Lemaisa, I think the Minhag Olam, and I asked Rabbi Willie about this, he says, our Minhag is, maybe not as far as the Yoruk HaShulcha, the Chalila, to be Machmer, but we're not Machmer. Our Minhag is to be Mekel on brown. But it's a very open issue. There are those who are machmer on browns, and there are those who make all kinds of pshoros, that they're sometimes machmer and sometimes makel. But our minhag is makel and brown, but you have to be bodek very, very, very carefully that it has no reddishness to it. Meaning you have to look very carefully and see that there's no reddish tint at all to the brown. Sometimes it's a brownish red or reddish brown. If it's a brownish red,
definition, brown always has red in it, as I said.
No, the question is, can we see it? Does it look that way? If it has reddish in it, then you can't be making looks up pure brown, like the pure coffee and chestnut the postcum spoke of. Well, you've been telling me once that Rav Schwab used to keep a can of coffee to put it next to the coffee so he could check to make sure that it was a pure brown and it wasn't a reddish brown. I haven't heard other people come quite that far. We can be makel across the board if it's a pure brown. Our minhag is to be makel on brown. However, there's the Darkei Tshuva quotes here an interesting vart from the Sefer called Teferes Tzvi. I'm not sure who the Teferes Tzvi is, if anyone else is. Now, he's not talking about brown, he's talking about yarok. But the Teferes Tzvi says, we'll be makel, but. If the woman comes, meaning during her, when she's tahora, if she comes with this mara, with this questionable color, we'll be makel, but tell her to be poresh for a day to see if the color gets worse. Because in derech hateva, there's a range of natural color secretions that come out of the rechem, and those colors change from tahor colors to tameh colors through the monthly cycle, and it's quite possible that if it's a borderline color, that's just a precursor to a, it could be that it's just stam, tahor color, could be the precursor to a tame color, and therefore, especially if it's a precursor to a tame color, then we might rethink ourselves. So the best thing to do is to check if you see she's morphing into a tame color, then you knew it was just better to avoid all along. If you see it was a fluke, then you can be more comfortable being makel. So well, it says that is whether I'll doubt that may be alpi din or alpi eitza. It could be alpi din. There's something called vesagot. Vesagot is also veses. A certain physical sign could also be a veses. So if you say many women, they see a borderline color and then they see red, then of course she has to be porous when she sees a borderline color. That's her veses. The same way she'd have to be Polish if she had cramps, and that was a proper SS, which we'll see whether it is or not soon in the very next sim. But if not, at least as an Eitzah, you know, this is around, this could be around the time when the color is going to get worse. So if you have a situation where it seems to be coming up to the time of the monthly period, or even if not, and there's a fluke and a brown color, then Rabbi Willig says, like this, the first three, or the first three, he was talking about even yellows. He said, not yellows, but at least browns, that the couple should be porridge one night, and then see if it gets worse or if it gets better as either an Eitzah Tova or maybe even as a Ves Sagot.
If it gets worse, so I guess you could say that every time you see it, she should be pericious. But if it gets better, would you say every time she sees it, she should also be pericious?
I mean, if there's a pattern. I mean, we're not talking about a woman who might see brown all month long for some strange reason, and that would be going a little far.
You're talking about brown or green?
I'm talking about brown. Oh. But if there's a brown, then it's a good, if there's a brown when she's Tahora, it's a good idea for her to be pericious. All else being equal, you have to see if there's a pattern. But all else being equal, it's often, you know, brown will be the before or after a red. Which again might mean that it's Adam El Shalaka and that the other folks were right, but at the very least it means you should be Polish. So that is what Rabbi Willig Paskins. I think the minute almost everyone I've ever spoken to says brown, as long as you're very, very medactic, be careful to make sure it's not reddish, that it doesn't have any red in it, that brown is okay. But Rabbi Willig says if a woman comes and, you know, it's been a month and, or even if it hasn't, then she doesn't know what's going on and all of a sudden she has brown, it's best to advise her to be Polish for one night just to see what's going on, because in most women brown is often a precursor of red. But if you're a Zayin Nekim or Seder brown, then you can be Mekel.
Just from
Bia? No, just from Bia. Okay. I think that's all the colors that I can think of.
Purple.
It's
got definitely
a red. You need a lot more than a shiner.
Yeah, anything can happen. It's probably, I mean, just likely as blue. But what would be a din of a purple? I don't know, what's a purple? Is a purple, well, it's got to be either a yarok or a shachar or an adam. What's purple? I don't know.
Last year, the purple Yikush went down the
soup. Yeah.
And they were
mamish purple.
Notes of the purple,
okay. Pure purple, I don't know. We'll worry about it when we come to it.
But it's like a Damaku. Yeah.
It could be the Damaku is more purplish, but I don't think it's mamish purple the way you think of it as purple. Anyway, if you had mamish purple, then you would have to ask someone who had a lot of bikkias. I'll just point out, people, rabbis who have a lot of bikkias, I mean, besides that, rabbi who has a lot of bikkias can be uncomfortable asking him what color it is. But rabbis who have a lot of bikkias can often do like the stories in Chazal, like that one story where the matron sent him 400 types of dam and he was able to identify the ideology of each one. A rabbi with a lot of bikkias can actually tell from the shade of the dam, from all the details of the bedika cloth, and the smell and the texture and etc., can actually tell a lot of biological information from it. So a rabbi is a big expert, not necessarily you and I, can actually tell from the shade. Is this damaka? Is this damnida? Does the woman have a medical condition, et cetera, et cetera? And a lot of these are easy enough tricks. You want to tell if a woman's pregnant or nursing from a bdika cloth, it's easy enough. You want to tell yeast infections, et cetera. But someone with real bikkias, I mean, can just look at something and tell you if it's damaka or not. Now, we're not so mech on that per se, but then you find other sudden to be mech.
Well, Erlaitin told us last year a story that Diane Fisher. So a woman who's pregnant had that dam, and she said that she's going to have to be on bedrest. Like two say to the doctor, so she has to be on bedrest.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even so mysterious, meaning it's well known that, but I guess to figure out exactly, it's well known that if a pregnant woman has dam, she might have to be on bedrest. But Diane Fisher probably can do better than might have to be. Yeah, in a chanamit. In general, Agav, I should point out, a pregnant woman who sees dam is usually considered a medical emergency. Unless it's mamish, this tiniest drop, etc. But any pregnant woman who sees dam, which certainly has more than a gris, etc., which is a real halachic shaila, we generally consider that to be, you know, at least close to a medical emergency. I don't know if mamish, I'm not saying should, you know, you should set the sirens going. But she should seek immediate medical attention because a pregnant woman is not supposed to see dam, and if she does, it could be from a sakana to the uber. So that's just a apropos of that, that she should seek, you know, medical attention as soon as possible. It's an important thing for a rub to know. Also, again, a rub with a lot of experience in this will be able to tell lots of things from examining bedikas. And, you know, then there's a whole other realm of experience, the pastoral side, which is what do you do with that information? But often that information is medically relevant. As a matter of fact, my cousin, Rav Nachum Borshtin, head of the Poe Institute, once said in his unique fashion, he said, it's so important for an experienced Rav to be able to see this, to help the couple with all kinds of various problems, that if there wasn't a din of showing maros to a Rav, we should have invented one. Because it's so important for the marriage and for the health, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's a real experience, bro. Anyway, the now this is all theoretical. Of course, you need the shimush. Again, even though the whole point of this seminar is you shouldn't need shimush and you shouldn't need machlok zachronim, but since we're in such a low madrega that we don't even know what's a shade of red, what's any shade of red and what isn't, you need shimush, what's a brown, etc., etc. And at least for the abreichim of the kolal, we will be, just because of his schedule, we can start earlier, but within the next couple of weeks, we'll be starting, those who didn't do it last year, who want to come back, shimush is very white skin, on maros, both to pick up the colors and some of the other issues which we'll mention, which we won't mention, and that's an important part, I think, of the training of any rabbi who wants to be able to pass in Shilas. The, yeah, right.
We came across in the footnote that the Sicilians are very against publishing picture charts of the different colors.
To the best of my knowledge, no one publishes pictures. I've never seen anyone publish a picture chart of the different colors. The main reason is, well, I don't know what the Siciliezer's reason is. You could say something needs to be a sower, etc. The main reason is that the technology of publishing colors is, I don't know, at least maybe nowadays it's better, but it was always tricky. It's very hard to reproduce colors very, very exactly. By now we probably have some computer technology that can do it. But it's traditionally been very hard to get it exact. And you know, sometimes how it looks depends not only on the color of the ink, but on the texture and the amount of the ink and the exact way it dries, etc. So it's very hard to reproduce these things exactly, number one. And number two, although again, now you can have 128-bit color depth. Maybe it's a little different. And number two, because I guess some things you really need mesorah. It's hard to learn from just a piece of paper. Although, you know, I'm not... I realize that I haven't explained why.
The Weizen basically said that there's no one could get to run to agree on what are the spectrums.
Right, that's also the problem. The problem with something which for so many hundreds of years was only Torah Shebal Peh, if for so many hundreds of years it was written in the Sfarim, then you can write your opinion and have Sfarim to back you up. If for so many hundreds of years it was Torah Shebal Peh and all of a sudden you put a Bechsav, then you have to have very, very, very broad shoulders. Okay, interesting theory. Lamaita doesn't matter because we don't have it. The some of the other details, there's a lot of other halachos here. The Torah Hashlamim in the first of Kutin talks about how you look at the color. So he says, he quotes the Gemara. There's a whole Gemara about this on Daf Chafam Beis, which has some shitas and has maskana. The maskana is, everyone knows, how are you supposed to be bodeg damim? In the between the sun and the shade, which means in the sunlight, but not direct sunlight. If you actually ever tried to look at something in direct sunlight, it's very hard to see it because there's too much light and it's a little blinding. But you make some shade, you know, you stand with the sun in your back and you hold it here, and you can see it in the shade of the sunlight. That's how the Gemara says you have to be bodeg. The Torah Hashlamim says, however, the Mechaber left out that whole sugya. So I'll tell you why the Mechaber left out the whole sugya. Because that was in their days, and they needed to distinguish between all the different shades of red. Nowadays, it's so simple. There's red and there's not red. So you can be bodeg however you want. It doesn't matter what kind of light you use for the bedikah. Nowadays, anything goes. Only in the old days were enacted. That is what most of the poskim assume. However, the Ramah later on in some Kuf Tzadik Vav, when he's discussing the Shiva Nekiyim, says you should be bodeg it during the day. You should look at it during the day. So, halacha l'maisa, Why should you look at during the day? There's a lot of different days in the Achronim, exactly, you know, and why did he say here? Halacha l'maisa, we assume that it depends how obvious it is. If it's the most obvious thing ever, like it's just purely like not a shaila at all, meaning not a brown. Every brown is a shaila. But it's like so pashut that there's no havamina one way or the other way. It's the reddest red you've ever seen. Or it's the, you know, palest yellow you've ever seen. Or, you know, it's if it's so pashut, then you could use any light, you want. If it's a shaila, then you should use the sunlight. The Aruch HaShulchan here points out, however, he says, that's l'chachila. L'chachila, if it's a shaila, you should use the sunlight. If you can't use the sunlight, the most common case is because it has to be paskin tonight. Let's say, you know, a woman does a bedikah at the end of the seventh day and has a shaila. She wants to know whether to go to the mikvah that night or not. By the time she gets to the rub, it's nighttime. So what's he going to do? He has to paskin tonight. She needs to know tonight. Or let's say a woman is tahora and all of a sudden is a shaila and she needs to know tonight. She doesn't want to wait till tomorrow. So if you're stuck, you can paskin at night. But ideally, if you're stuck, you can paskin at night even if it's a shaila. But ideally, you should paskin during the day. That's right. Well, it also said that way. So he said again, if it's obvious, then you paskin any light you want. If it's a shaila, then you should try to paskin during the day. But if you have no choice but to paskin at night and you feel comfortable, you can paskin at night. The tricky part about paskining at night is that obviously you're using artificial light, and most of us probably aren't using candles. Which light you use makes a big difference, because different lights have different actual spectrums of wavelength that they put out, which change the color. Right? I mean, everyone knows you could have like sometimes these funky black lights or whatever change the color. Even this, as the general rule, is that an incandescent light makes something look redder than it would be during the day. But a fluorescent light makes it look yellower.
But if you look up here, these light bulbs,
The truth is that nowadays there are like different flavors of fluorescent light also. Nowadays you can buy any different shade of fluorescent light. Extra, they have a shade that mimics the sunlight. There definitely was one in the store which said it mimics the sunlight. I don't know. But as a general rule, at least, the old-fashioned fluorescent lights were more makel than Hashem was when he invented the sun, and the incandescent lights are more makhir than Hashem was. Which means that, you know, you have to have a chush for taking that into account, which is, you know, definitely a reason to be careful about paskin at night. But if you're comfortable, again, if it's not a shaila, don't worry about it. If it's a shaila and you're comfortable paskin at night, you can. But the ideal is to paskin in the sunlight. That's the Aruch HaShulchan here basically comes to that maskana, where Willie Wells says that he thinks that should be our practice. There's an interesting discussion here based on a maisa with Rebbe in the Gemara. We don't have time to go to the maisa. In the beginning of the Pesukei Tshuva, cut in the Aleph, the Giva Shol says, if you have a kesem shav alayla ninan maritame, the yom shiyavish nirish maritara, at night it looks tame, but during the day, it looks tahar. So everyone knows the day is better than night, especially, I mean, in their day, they're talking about night, one little candle, there wasn't proper illumination. So what do you do if in the day it looks tahor? Do you have to say, no, it was originally tame? Or that now you see that it was really tahor all along? The Giva Shol here is mekel. Lushay Shred has this based on Rosh Hashanah, where he says, but if you see it keeps changing through the day, then obviously it's just changing, so you can't trust what happened during the day. But let's assume at night it looked bad. During the day, all day it looked good. So on the one hand, you say, look, at night it looked bad. That was my first view. But on the other hand, no, I didn't have good light. All day it looks good. It's not changing. It was probably good all along. I just didn't have good light. So the quotes at the end here, this in the middle, really, Sidri Tara says it depends. If you thought it was bad at night, but you weren't sure, then you can be makel. But if you were sure it was bad at night, then you have to assume it really was bad and it changed. Not that you just got a better view and you should be machmir. The Rare Willig actually quotes the Rivers Moshe that he was makel in this. But it's the lechora, the best eitzah is, again, if you weren't sure at night, it looked bad at night, but you weren't 100% sure, then the day it looks good, you go by the daytime. If you were sure it was bad at night, and then the day it looks good, that's machlokas. The Sidra Tara says, you have to go by the first time you saw it. And the Grashal says, you make it. Lechora, the best eitzah is that if you see something at night, you should not be sure. You should wait till the morning. Obviously, if it's possible to wait till the morning, if something looks bad at night, then it's better not to be sure and to wait till the morning. If you really were 100% sure at night, like Bal Karcha, you just had no choice but to be 100% sure, then it's a big shaila, but Rav Willig said you can be makel on this against the Sidrei Tara. But again, it's the Lechora, if you're so sure at night, it shouldn't change during the day. And if you're only 99% sure at night, then you shouldn't consider yourself sure and should avoid this. Avoid this shaila is a good eitzah. The other interesting discussion I'll just point out is the Chassam Sofer here at the end of the Pesach Shuvos have gotten days. It's a fascinating discussion. Just like there are some people who are machmir nowadays in many parts of the Torah Belt, it's considered to be a universal requirement. In the old days, we considered only a chumrat yechidim, that anything which is a shayla, they don't eat. Mar says, lo acham behem shahor b'chacham. So any dam that's a shayla, the husband should be machmir. What if the husband wants to be machmir and the wife wants to be makel? Then the Chassam Sofer paskins that the husband has the right to be machmir, because every woman wants her husband to be a big talmid chacham and big yirei shamayim, and even if that comes at a cost. It's very fascinating. Halach l'mais, if you actually get one of these shaylas, then you probably have to use your pastoral skills. And not just the Chassam Sofer, even if he's right, but you still have to use your pastoral skills. Okay. The other very fascinating discussion is based on the Gemara. There's a strange chumrah, I guess we should mention it, just so we don't hold like it. Tazkot is a strange chumrah from the Bach, that if a woman took a bath and then has white, maybe that was really red that got clean in the bath. Very unclear exactly how that works. The Maisa, the Taz isn't koshish for it. No one's koshish for it. We're not exactly sure what the Bach meant by it, but whatever he meant by it, we're not koshish for it. The other chumrah of the Bach is very fascinating, based on the Gemara. The Gemara says a principle, a very important principle, ein lo ledayan el lamasha ein of rovos. You can only judge by what you see. What does the Gemara mean by that? You don't say, let's say, this actually happens all the time. I could see something and say, this looks okay, but it's 2 days old. I sort of have a suspicion that sometimes, it's not like a general rule, like it always happens, then maybe you have to have more suspicion, but there is such a phenomenon that colors could get less red as time goes by, because of oxidation or something, I don't know. So you say, I sort of have a suspicion that even though it looks okay now, when it first came out and was wet and was moist, was fresh, maybe it was not okay. So maybe I should be machmir. The Gemara says the principle, ein lo ledayan el mashein of rovos, you pass in by what you see, not by what you didn't see. And even though it might be a logical suspicion, it could be. Haka, it could be that it looks okay now, but it seems to me, I have a hunch based on my experience, that it could have been not okay yesterday. Doesn't matter. The halacha doesn't work that way. You go by what you see. That's an established halachic principle that's so partial the Shulchan Aruch didn't tell us. You don't worry about what it used to look like. The machlokes achronim here is, okay, well, you don't worry about what it used to look like because, whatever, what can you do? It's gone. What are you going to worry about what used to be? It's impossible to ever find out what was. You can't go backwards in time. What about the opposite case? What if now it looks tahar, but you have a sneaking suspicion that tomorrow it'll turn tummy? Then, do you have to worry about what might happen tomorrow? Because after all, you could just wait and see. It's not impossible to worry, but just wait and see. So the Bach has a tremendous chumrah here. The Bach says that when you have a yarok, tremendous, tremendous chumrah of the Bach. Quoted in the, I think, the Shach and the Taz here. Yeah, the Shach's have gotten Gimel. The Taz, the second half, have gotten Aleph. He says, if you have a yarok or a lavan, then it could be that it'll really turn red. It could be that it'll really turn red. And therefore, you should wait to see if it turns red before you paskin. After all, even though ein lo ledayan el mashein of rovos, but here you could just wait and see what happens. So it's better to wait and see. Don't jump to any rash conclusions. That's the tremendous chumrah of the Bach. there are two different reasons why Poskim argue on the Bach.
Does to wait mean until it gets dry? Or
yeah, until it dries. Wait till it dries, and then see what it looks like then. Which is a chiddush, because the Gemara says, Emol Mashin of Roos. So the Bach say, that just means you don't have to worry about the past, because it's too late. But you do have to worry about the future, because you could wait and see. This is a tremendous chiddush. No one agrees with the Bach, but there are two different reasons you could disagree with the Bach. The Bach says, you have to wait. The Shach and the Taz both say against the Bach, if I am being medayik in them correctly. They say you don't have to wait. Why not? What principle do they use? What? What halachic principle do they use? Say you don't have to wait. Ein lo dayin al shein of rose. But what other halachic principle? What? Lo machzikin and reyasa. There's a principle. Lo machzikin and reyasa. We don't assume a problem. Obviously, if there's a suffix, there's a suffix. But we don't assume problems out of the clear blue. It's a real authentic halachic principle. Comes up all the time in Isra Hetzer as well. That if there's a latent suffix, that's one thing. But if there's no latent suffix, you have no reason to be a suffix. You just think, maybe. We're not allowed to be choshesh for maybe Isurim. Only if there's a concrete reason to think it might be bad. You don't invent Isurim. So, they say, lo machzikin on reisa. So you don't have to wait and see. You don't have to wait and see, because why assume for no reason that there could be a problem? Of course, if you're medayik in this, if you're medayik in the shach, what would happen if it did turn red? If you're medayik in the shach? It sounds like if it did turn red, it would be usur. You just don't have to wait, because why should we assume it will turn red? But it sounds like this is the day of the Shvus Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov sounds like... The Shvus Yaakov... You don't have to wait, but if it did turn red... Then it's usher. Yeah, you don't have to wait, but if you wait anyway, you don't have to mask the grace. So Paskin right now, she's okay. But if for some reason you waited anyway, and it did turn red, then it's usher.
You mean waiting, you didn't give her an answer, or you and yourself didn't decide what?
No, you gave her an answer. You said right now when it's fresh and moist, it looks good, and you're muteris. And then you come back to your desk the next morning and you say, hold on a second, this is old. Now that it's dry, I see that it's all red. Then you call her back and say, I made a mistake.
Why?
Okay, we'll get that in a second. Then you call it sound. But that's the deal, because the Shach says, we don't worry about a reisa. But it sounds like theoretically it might be, it's just we don't worry about it.
We should throw out the shadows right away.
Ah, okay, exactly. But the more makel shita is, if you look in the Pesach Shugat and Gimli quotes, the Shuvas Chacham Tzvi, the famous Chacham Tzvi, which a lot of other
Poskim also agree with. He mentioned the Chacham Tzvi, the Chavos Das also agrees. The Sidrei Tara, different people quote him a little differently. The Sidrei Tara also seems to be noted that way. He says he doesn't like the Shvus Yaakov so much. Right. Sidrei Tara is also noted that way. He says, not just Imasi, we don't worry that it might turn red. Even if it does turn red, it's mutter. Because when does Dan make her a Nida? When it comes out. So if when it comes out it wasn't red, who cares what happens to it later? It only depends on when it comes out. So even if it does turn red, she's still Muteris. Not just that we don't worry it might turn red. We don't care if it turns red or not. So even if it does turn red, she'll still be Muteris because it wasn't red at the critical moment of, you know, halachic, of halachic relevance. That is a big machlokus. The ma'aseh of the Shelus Yavetz, who we know is right, is the Chacham Tzvi's son, says, I'm not sure if I can be somech my father in this. I'm a little nervous. Halacha le, halacha, the Aruch HaShulchan actually has an interesting pshara. He says, this is actually interesting for other reasons. He says, if it all turned red, then maybe we should be machmir. But if it only turned red at the edges, then he has a scientific theory. Maybe it's correct. I never tried. Check. That it probably wasn't red, just the tiny little red molecules gravitate to the edges, but that's not a real red. Lemaisa, of course the Chacham Tzvi seems to have the better svara,
course the Chavon Tzvi is right. Who gives him it turns red later? If it wasn't red when it came out of her body, then it's not Matamir. But the Bach, actually, if you look inside the Bach, he addresses this. The Bach says, no, if it turns red later, then it was probably red all along. It just had lightened a little and then redarkened to its original shape. So the Chor, the Yisod of Machlok, is really, as everyone knows, no one's an idiot here. Everyone knows it only depends on the moment it came out. The Machlokas is, if it turns red later, is that Igloy Milta that it was red at the beginning also? Or not? So the Bach says, you have to be Choshesh. The Shach and Taz don't imply to be Machmir. We don't have to be Choshesh, but if it does turn red, it's a problem, like the Shvatz Yaakov. The Chacham Tzvi is Mekel. Halacha Lamaisa, it's a little tricky. And therefore, we're not sure who to follow. For sure, we don't follow the Bach. That's a Shitat Yochid. But do we follow the Chacham Tzvi, or do we follow the Shvatz Yaakov? Especially since the Shach and Taz sound like the Shvatz Yaakov. Otherwise, they should have said, who cares if it turns color? Why didn't they just say, we don't suspect it'll turn color? So halacha lemaisa, as Gershon told us, the halacha is that if you paskin about a shayla, you should immediately throw it out, and therefore you won't see what happens to it later, and you won't even get into this machlokas. So to avoid getting into this machlokas, you should not save maros, because you don't want to get into this machlokas. That Shelos Yavetz is afraid to be so much on his father. The Shach and Taz Taka don't sound like the Chacham Tzvi. So, therefore, you should throw it out. An additional factor which tells you should for sure throw it out is that somebody else want to bring in Drachei Darchei Noam. You know, it's not Mestaver. It can't be that you'll tell a woman she's okay and then call her the next morning and say, sorry, I made a mistake. It's not Drachei Darchei Noam. But, we're not bold enough to say, well, it's not Drachei Darchei Noam, so let's just make a legamre. Better off to say, because the Drachei Darchei Noam, don't get into the Shiloh in the first place and never save a Shiloh. You should always throw it out immediately, and that's the minhag of all the Mori Hara that I've ever seen, that as soon as they finish passing a shayla, they immediately throw it in the garbage, and they don't leave it lying around in their desk for them to notice later and come up with a shayla.
So all the Marsh Maguras that people have?
So what about those? Obviously, some people, what do you do about all the Marsh Maguras that people have? Haven't heard Weitzman come with hundreds and hundreds of maros. It could be. Okay, what they do there is instead of throwing it in the garbage, they throw it into a big box together with 100 other women's. So if you see the big box later, you're not going to know which woman's it was anyway, so maybe that's how they solve the problem.
Let's say even more practical than that, the writing used to say one of the most important things is for when you're gives a pair of underwear to check, he said it's very much not to return it. He said it's to make sure they return it. And let's say it takes a woman a day and a half. She comes to pick it up. And even if you don't know her name, you have a phone number, you have something, she has some way to identify it. Mm-hmm. The mice is still in your house. It's not thrown out.
So what did he say?
No, I'm just
putting it out. So the answer is you should put it in an envelope. Okay. The post-com say she should put it in the wash right away, but obviously it doesn't work.
What do you mean
put it
in an envelope?
And don't look at it.
Oh, that's it.
Put it in an envelope and don't look at it.
You're not in trouble. Don't take the garbage out.
Right.
Could it be easier by putting this fresh blood and drying it, like putting it near a fire or something, let it dry right away to the box or something?
But we don't hold like the box. We don't hold like the box. No, we don't want to be more macro than necessary. Better not look. Okay. Usually in halacha, we don't say what you don't know won't hurt you. That's what people who don't believe in the Torah say. But in some cases, when we have a principle, and the Torah tells us you should look at something, and that's a vados, and ain't something with the vada, and it's machlok, because the post can we get into anyway. In this case, what you don't know won't hurt you. Okay. The last inyan here that we have to discuss before we finish the, which is a very difficult inyan, is the discussion of the Pisgei Truvin of Katan Hay, which is what about cases of harobuses where it's a tahor color and there's a little tummy. Now, what does that mean? So I'm jumping the gun a little here, but hopefully we're a little familiar. When you have psamim, a kesem is only, if you just find a stain, is only tummy if it has a certain size, the size of a gris. So if you have, we'll see, it's a big offer with a poskim. But if you have things with different colors, let's say there's a tiny drop of red or black, then that tiny drop is not a gris, not a problem. The issue is, what about a real bedika? A real bedika, a kolshu, one speck is usr. So what about specks? So the theoretical halacha is very, very clear. One speck of red is usr. It should be all a very wonderful, neutral, harmless color in one speck, tipas dam kechardo, when we say chardel zavdak, you don't have to get mustard seed, any size, is tame. However, it gets a little complicated. This is the Pesach Chuba discusses gotten hay. He's discussing in case a woman had a hargasha that her mucker opened. Not so common nowadays. But the problem is that often, now it depends. There's specks and there's edges. Often you'll have something where, like, in the middle we'll get a little more reddish, or at the end we'll get a little more reddish. That's a tamei bedika. It's sort of an in-between color. It has some red, some non-red. That's a natural tamei bedika. You see, it's a little drop of red, and that's why you have to be very careful examining the bedika cloth. You have to look at every single square millimeter to see if it's red or not. Because if one square millimeter is red, that's a problem. That's if it looks like it's part of, if it's part of the mare, you morph into a shade of red, that means she's still in her period, and that's a tummy, and it should be tummy. That's the way of the world. But what if you see something that doesn't make any sense? A little speck, a little drop, a little flake that doesn't fit in with the pattern. It's not like it's a yellowish brownish which gets into red at the edge or one dot. It's like total pale yellow, and there's a funny speck in the middle which looks like it doesn't belong there. Then that is a big shaila. If you have little dots, the Pesach Chuba brings up the factor of Achein or Baduk, because your intuitive feeling is that it might not really be blood or any secretion from the woman's body. Your intuitive feeling is that a tiny little speck that doesn't seem to belong, using common sense, is probably a foreign object, just dirt. With little black dots, that is for sure the case. Little black dots are 99.9% of the time dirt. It's not the derech of a woman's body to have a pale yellow or white color mare with a tiny few little black dots. That's not the natural derech hateva. That's almost always dirt. The question is, what does that mean lamaisa? That's just a theory. So, hopefully we'll learn a little bit of that with Rabbi Weitzman. Or maybe we have already. But there's a masorah you have to learn from some poskim that, first of all, you should suspect it's dirt. You should ask around. We'll learn the din of Achein u'Baduk, trying to figure out how the dirt might have gotten there. There's a masorah from some poskim that if it comes off very easily and doesn't seem to be attached to the rest, that might be a raya that it's dirt. It's the masorah that many people have, but you have to see exactly how to do it. Did Rabbi Weitzman discuss that last year? Okay, maybe we'll ask him too. You can't automatically say a tiny speck of black is mutter because I know it's dirt, I know it's not biological. But if you can learn simonim to figure out how it might be dirty, either using the rules of Achein u'Baduk, you say, oh, Taka, I remember now that there was this dirt right next to the bedika cloth after I used it or whatever, that might have gotten on it. Or, you figure out how to, tell from flicking it off that it's dirt, which I'm not going to verbally assume that I can accurately communicate. Then there's room to be makel in general with these little black dots. If you can't be makel, then if necessary, you can bring to someone who can be makel, because there are people with expertise in being makel there, because the common sense is on the side of kupa. When you have a tiny, tiny, tiny speck of red, again, not meaning it's like part of the color, just at one tiny speck it becomes red. That's hakatame. But you have a tiny speck of red which doesn't belong at all in the middle of pure white, which could be a tiny drop of damnita, or it could be dirt. Then, when necessary, you should try to see if you can come up with a kula, but that's really could go either way. All right, Willick says in Eitza, if you use a microscope or a magnifying glass, sometimes you could tell by looking at it that it's not dam. Such as once he brought something to a microscope and he saw that it was a string. And then he said, okay, dam isn't the shape, it didn't look like a string on a microscope. It's a thread. All clothing has threads. Threads get all over the place. So that was grounds to be made. Also, when you see tiny specks, at the end of the simon, there is a sort of if you lose tiny specks of the scuff, but normally tiny specks of black and red are not automatic license to be makel, but they're definitely laid to suffic and room to be makel, especially in the black, for an expert Mora Hora, room to be makel almost all the time. For red, it at least opens the possibility of investigating further. And number one, by questioning whether it's Badik or Ein Badik, whether the red could have come someplace else. Some people stretch to say nothing is an Ein Badik for such a small spot, which again, the concept will get to. Or maybe sometimes a microscope will help. There's never a halakhic obligation to use a microscope, l'chumra, if otherwise you were ready to be mako, but if otherwise you're ready to be makra, you can always use one l'kula.
Last year, I remember threads were pretty common, actually.
Threads were pretty common, red threads.
Also,
red is a very common color. And I think the post can assume, if you look and see that it's a thread, then you can assume that it is.
Also, sometimes you see like little pieces of toilet paper.
Okay, that's also a... and I guess you can tell somehow. Okay, so these are things you have to watch out for. But again, I'm not talking here about something that seems to be just a variety within the shape. It's a variety within the shape, even if it's only 0.01% of the surface area, then that's authentic red damnida. It's only if it looks like it sticks out like a sore thumb and it's probably a foreign body. And even then, that's not an automatic kula, but that's grounds for investigating and trying to find inside the kula, if possible. And for black, a lot of poskim will say it's almost always possible if you have the proper mesora. Okay, the very end of this is the Sif Aleph is a very pashat din that's against a very strange chumra that Truma Sadesha. Affiliation smichos damvu of harbe, even if the yellow or white color is very thick. Even if she had a hargosha that the marker opened and she found this. You might have thought, like the Shrimas Adesha was unsure. He said, maybe if it's very thick and dam-like and she had hargosha, there's a speck of dam in the air that you can't see because it's painted over by the light. No, we're not close for that. That's too crazy. Unlike the Shrimas Adesha, if it's a tar color, we don't have any crazy chumers. Very fascinating issue. If someone has hargosha and then finds nothing, we end up being machra in that. But again, nowadays, that's a very uncommon thing to happen. Okay, so if days. Nemenes isha lomar kazera isi va'avadtiv. If a woman loses the bedika, or kets, or whatever it was, she's neman to say, oh, hold on a second, I can tell you it was exactly like this Rambam. That's what it was when I lost it. And then the chacham could pass it on the Rambam and say this Rambam, or you could be Mako. Obviously, she says like this Gemara, then even though it's not, you know, the reddest red in the world, that's for sure a type of red, and Rimachmer. Anyway, but a woman's Neman to say that. Now, this is a Gemara asked this question. Is a woman Neman to say or not? And the Gemara has a Stira, and the Gemara answers, it depends if it's lost or if we could look at it. If it's lost, then the only information we have is the woman says it looked like this. So we have to trust her. But if it's in front of us, and we can see it with our own eyes, then we don't have to trust her. That's the Gemara's pshara. The question is, what did the Gemara mean by that? So that's the makhluk between the Rashba and Lechor Rashi, although Rav Moshe Feinstein says that Rashi didn't mean it. The Shulchan Aruch passes like the Rashba. Says what? Avol im hevia lefaneinu dam vechzek nuha betami ofilim stapaknu mutami yotahar v'yomer eschach and pulling tiyul v'keyot v'zeh ain't something other than if we don't have the blood, or sorry, the potential blood, the questionable color, and she tells us what it looked like, we have to trust her. We have no choice. But if we have it and it looks tummy to me, or even I'm 50-50 Masopet, and she says, no, this is just like another color that the biggest gadol ador in the world was Matahar for me, then we don't trust her. And we say, no, if I say it's tummy, she must be wrong. Or even if I'm Masopet, she must be wrong. That's what the Rashi says. So the contrast is, if it's lost, we have to trust her. If I see it with my own eyes, then I shouldn't trust her. Why don't I trust her, by the way? I don't trust her, Pashas, because I think she's making a mistake. These are subtle things. How do you know you remember 100% this exact, like this color? So, that's the Rashba. According to the Rashba, it's not so much of a, it's not so much of a chumra. All it's saying is that we trust her unless we see with our own eyes that it's tummy or 50-50. However, the shach, and the seems to take it a step further. Rechein ish azusim esu pekas bedam shlo ein lo shivkan zayin lismo kach verchir also ladam of yomer lakadam zeh shalchay reisi gam ani l'ploni kacham v'tihem. Not only shouldn't we rely on the woman if the chacham sees it, but even if the chacham could see it, then we don't rely on the woman. Let's say her mother says to her, oh, this is just like another color that the big expert paskin for me was taller. Then, since it's not lost, since we could show it to a chacham, then we have to show it to a chacham. We don't rely on the woman if we could show it to a chacham. So again, what are the different cases? Here, if it's lost, then she isn't a menace. We rely on her. If the chacham sees either tumah or safek, then ain't a menace. Then for sure, we don't rely on the woman. Because the chacham is better than her best guess or estimate as a layman's opinion. What about the in-between case? What about the case where the chacham didn't see it, but you could bring it to a chacham? Which is, of course, the common case. You know, usually women don't lose their bedikas. And usually, the woman not going to go up to the chacham and say, chacham, that's your opinion? No, I think this looks just like a color that, you know, that a bigger rabbi than you once said was taller. Most women don't have that chutzpah. The common case is, it's right here, the mara is right here, because you have to bother to bring it to the chacham or not. So here's where the Rashba and the Machaber would look over saying that menes. As long as she's not going against the chacham, we trust her. Why not? We wouldn't trust her against the chacham, not even against the chacham's suffix. But if she's not against the chacham, but Rashi and the Shach say she's not nemenes. Why? She's only nemenes as a last resort when she lost it. When we could, a general rule, we could be mivarish something. You shouldn't rely on a guess. Right, just like Shimulai and Rove, etc. So if she could be invited to show it to a chacham, then she has to show it to the chacham. She can't paskin for herself. Okay, good. Now,
but is he saying that she could?
So what is the shach actually saying? That who can paskin?
Her friend.
Her friend can paskin. The shach's not actually talking about herself, talking about her friend. But the Sidrei Tara, which is summarized here by the Pesukei Tshuva, Shukat and Vav, says, "V'ayim the Sidrei Tara dafilu asmeni chol lismuch huzeh." She can't rely on herself either. The Sidrei Tara says, "Ein an emenes, not her friend, and not herself." Why is her friend not an emenes? Mark, is her friend an evil person? No, because her friend's not an expert. Her friend's a balabasta, so she's also a balabasta. So if her friend's not an emenes, she shouldn't be an emenes. If her friend's not nemenis, she shouldn't be nemenis either. Since she's not Naaman and Menis, and her friend's not nemenis. However, Rav Moshe says, no, that's not what the Rashi said, and that's not what the Shach said. Don't go inventing chumras, Mr. Sidrei Tara. The Rav Moshe says, she is nemenis, just her friend isn't. She's nemenis, just her friend is an emenis. That's her Rav Moshe. That's her Rav Moshe interprets the Shach and Rashi against the Sidrei Tara. Because everyone agrees, we're machmer like Rashi's quoted in the Shach. But are we only machmer like friend? Logically, the Sidrei Tara is right. If her friend's not an emenis, neither is she, because they're both in the same boat. They're both not experts. They don't have smicha. But on the other hand, Moshe says, no, Rashi only said her friend's not nemenis, but she is. Why? Either because she is special and modest for supper law, pigzeros akasa, where Moshe says a little differently. He says, like, for her, it's not considered like horah, so she doesn't have to be so machmir, but if her friend already passed for her, that's horah, and her friend's not roi lahorah. But halacha lemaisa, one second, halacha lemaisa, what do we, halacha lemaisa, what do we do with this? It's unclear. Some people pass on the Sidrei Tara, some people pass in like Rav Moshe. Lechora, for most people I've seen, make a bit of a, Lechora, for most people I've seen, will tell you that, you know, it depends. if she says this color is a color that's like something the Chacham told me was not a Shaila. If she's like, whatever, this is not even a Shaila at all, this is not even a Safek, this is, you don't need a Ra for, then she's Nemetis. But if the theoretically maybe passing like Rav Moshe, theoretically maybe we can rely on Rav Moshe, that she's always Nemetis, but Halacha L'Maisa, we should tell a woman, if something is not a Shaila at all, you can rely on this is just like the thing that wasn't a Shaila. If it's a Shaila but it was okay, then you should bring it to the rabbi every time. And I think that's the Minhag Olam. If a woman brings a Shaila to the rabbi, I'll say, this isn't a Shaila. You don't have to, if you want, you bring it to me once, twice more. You're a new caller, you're a little nervous, but you don't have to bring this to me. This isn't the kind of thing that has to go to a rabbi. And then there might be another Shaila that says, if this is a Shaila, you always have to bring this to me. And in this case, it's Tahar, but it's difficult, and you need a rabbi every time. That's the Minhag Olam, to make a little bit of a pshara, and to assume, even though, again, theoretically, maybe you could rely on Rav Moshe, but the Minhag Olam is, if it's not a Shaila, she can rely on herself. If it is a Shaila, then she shouldn't rely on herself, just because these things are very subtle. I'll just point out two things about this, like, why she ever had no Nemanis. First of all, I mean, it's L'chura, it's Pasha. It's not because of her gender, because she's a woman. And the Chacham's a man, it's because she's not a Chacham, and the Chacham is, meaning a man doesn't have any more Nemanis than a woman if he's not a Chacham. It means a Chacham has Nemanis, because a Chacham's an expert in this. A non-Chacham, a Balabas, doesn't have Nemanis. It just happened to be that the Balabatim are women, because what are men Balabatim? We were discussing this in the first place. So if a woman is in Nishmat, to the best of my knowledge, they do not train the women to Paskin on Marotz. In Nishmat, I believe they only train the women to educate people and teach them clear Piske Halacha of the Rabbanim, not to be Morei Hora. But theoretically, if there is a woman who is an expert on Marotz, then she's the Chacham, and of course she could Paskin whatever she wants. It's always throughout the Dor has been sort of an open secret that there are many Rabbaniyot who really Paskin and didn't show it to their husbands. But if a woman's a Chacham, then she's a Chacham. It has nothing to do with her gender. It has to do with her education. And if a man's not a Chacham, then he is not a Chacham. That's one thing. The other thing is, why do we suspect a woman? What happened to Eidach and Neman Bisurin? So the Pasha answer is, well, why don't we say Eidach and Neman Bisurin here? Even if the woman's not a Chacham, why don't we believe her? Because, Eidach and Neman Bisurin, she wouldn't lie. But here it's not an issue of lying. It's an issue of being mistaken. Eidach and Neman Bisurin means we assume he's not lying. But if something's so subtle and easy to make a mistake about, then unless you're an expert, we assume you might have made a mistake. That's the Shach gives an example. He's got in Zion. He says, if she says straight out that this rabbi said this is Tahara, I'm not using my judgment. It's a fact. Of course we believe her on facts. Eidach and Neman Bisurin. We don't think anyone's lying. It's just that when it's a judgment call and she says, I'm sure this is the same color as a Tahara color. Hard to be sure it's the same color, so that's the only time you don't believe it. The funny Torah Shlomim here, also quoted in Pesach Tshuva, says that if she says, she brings in, she says, here's the Mara, it's a fact that Ploni Chacham is Tahara. You see yourself it's the same. We still don't believe her. All the Achronim, the Dr. Tshuva, both reject that Torah Shlomim, and even one or two who want to accept it have to come up with funny explanations, like maybe the color changed, and etc. But Pashas, whenever it's a fact, we never think the woman's lying. If we thought he were lying, we'd have bigger problems than that. It's just that when it's a matter of what's the same color as what, it's very easy if you're not an expert to make mistakes in that. So if you don't trust a woman to say what's the same color as what, certainly for her friend, possibly even for herself, if it's at all a shiloh. And the woman shouldn't trust herself.
I remember one time from a shechter in the name of Helvetic that he said the reason she got in the minutes here, because Erech is not very soon, but Erech is not able to say over a psak, unless that Erech is a healer himself.
Okay, that's interesting. Could be. You have to think about the implications. I can think of some complications, so I won't go further into that now. L'maisa, one very important issue that Tosus makes a diuk in the sugya. It's a diuk, but everyone accepts it. That the shach was cut in Zion, a chacham's allowed to paskin on his own wife's dam. It's actually interesting. Tosus asks, how come Yalta didn't bring her husband to dam? So from a sociological perspective, he says, well, maybe he could have paskined it, but it would have been mutlis to him, so she didn't want him to see these things. Or maybe she was afraid that he'd be too machmir because he's such a chassid in Yerushalayim, and she'd rather bring it to an objective third opinion. We're not choshed that he'd be too makel because he's no gay avodah. We're only choshed that he'd be too machmir because of the Yerushalayim. Anyway, but Lamaisa, Tosfos paskins, and everyone picks up on this. Tosfos says that a chacham could paskin his own wife's maros, the chachmas adam, which is quoted here by someone. By the end of the Epistle of Chubas of Katan Vav, says, hold on a second, we have a rule. You're allowed to paskin to yourself when there's cheskes heter, but you're not allowed to paskin to yourself when there's cheskes iser. So how can this chacham paskin his own wife's? What if it's a hefsek tara? Or what if it's shiva nikiyim? She's a cheskes iser. So we say that no, that's not cheskes iser, because that's suri lishtanus. You can't say cheskes iser that she's bleeding, because she has to stop bleeding. That's the way of the world. And therefore, it's not a real cheskes iser. Says, what's the only cheskes iser? So that's why he's allowed to paskin her dam. Because it's not cheskes iser, it's chazoka suya l'shtanos, it's not a chazoka. What's the only real cheskes iser? Until she goes to the mikvah, she can be nida for a trillion years. She can be nida till Mea v'eser until she goes to the mikvah. That's the cheskes iser until she tovels. So if there's a shaila about her tvila, then the chacham can't paskin his own wife's tvila shaila. You know, if there's a shaila whether the mikvah was kosher or not, or more common, a chatzitza shiloh, whether her tefillah was valid or not, then he has to ask a different rabbi, because that's cheskes iser mamash. She could go to mea v'eser and be a nida. But the shiloh, whether she stopped bleeding or not, what the color of the dam is, then he's allowed to paskin. That is the halacha l'maisa. Sif gimel.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, so that doesn't mean to be the quote-unquote mikvah lady, the one who what's the job of the mikvah lady? So that's actually, well, maybe we should discuss this or whatever. That's actually a big machlokas around the world nowadays, exactly what's the job of the mikvah lady, what isn't the job of the mikvah lady. But at the very, very least, the job of the mikvah lady is to make sure that the woman's hair is all under the water, because you can feel, I think, if your body's all under the water or not, no nerve endings in your hair, and a lot of women have long hair. So how do they know all their hair went under the water? So that's the mikvah lady's job. So what if the husband has to be the mikvah lady? If they're on a desert island, he's the only one to be the mikvah lady. So then we assume the husband can be a mikvah lady, because that's not paskining. That's just looking. Looking he can do. Eidach and Emma be serum, he just can't paskin. Because in paskining, you have to use your judgment, and when you use your judgment, you might be biased. But in looking, that's just looking. That's very similar. I'm making up this parallel, but everyone knows the Mishnah Sanhedrin, right? That an ohev or a sone could be an aid, just can't be a dayan, because an aid just looks. A dayan has to use his judgment. Okay. The Sif Gimel has this very, very difficult sugi. This is one of the most difficult sugis, just to keep track of all the shitas in the beginning of, I think, the fourth parak, or maybe the third parak. The beginning of the third parak, Afkaf Aleph. Dam bishvoferes hechnisa shvoferes voltiya b'dam tahora. If you stick, not that I can't imagine it's a common thing, but it's an important theoretical question. If you stick a tube into pashtus, we're talking here about into the uterus, and the dam comes out through the tube, the chenim rosa dam b'chaticha, or a little chunk of flesh came out, which is not a normal thing to happen, of the uterus. And there was blood inside the chaticha. Either way, the blood was in something else. It didn't come out stam. Even if the blood is not encapsulated, it's not locked up inside the chaticha. The chaticha has cracks, and the blood is in the cracks, but it's also touching the walls of the rechem as it comes, or of the opening, the cervix as it comes out. Tehora, she is tehora. This is a very, very complex gemara. I'm not even going to try to summarize all the shitas, but, well, at least bring the most famous part of the discussion. The Gemara says, Roh Adam b'shvoferes, that's one thing everyone agrees. Everyone seems to agree to this Chatifa part also, but Tosus says not so Pashut. The top Tosus, I think, on Beis Manal. The Gemara says, if the Dam comes out through a tube, she's tar, because it says Bivsara and not b'shvoferes. What does that mean? So there are two general approaches. The Rush, who the Torah Kedar Kodesh approves of, and who the Mechaber here is echoing, says it's a matter of Kedarka lo Kedarka. If Dam comes out Kedarka, she's a Nida, just like everything else in the Torah, just like Chol Shabbos. Kedarka, she's a Nida, but if it comes out Shelo Kedarka, in an unusual, abnormal way, then she's Tahora. And obviously, if the blood comes out through a tube, or comes out in a piece of flesh, that's an unnatural way. That's the derech of the rush, which the Machaber says, came and changed derech leros kach, because that's not the derech. However, they don't quote the Rosh, but from Rashi and Tosfos say, no, it's not, they all say loki derech, they say it's an inyan of chatzitza. Rashi and Tosfos say, no, it's an inyan of chatzitza. If, just like many things in halacha, you have to touch. If the blood touches her body on its way out, then it's metameter. If the blood, it doesn't touch her body because it's blocked by a tube on the way out, then it's not metameter. It's actually, if you want to ayin, they use the lashon of the lokadarka and the lashon of chatzitza, the har tzvi and his hagos on the Torah, which is a little hard to find, but they published once. He maybe to the shutz someplace too, quotes the whole chakira between the achron and the orcha shulchan and the tziv, I think, as to what their actual shita is it that it's a din of chatzitza, but anything that's a derech is not chotzeitz, or it's a din of kedarka, but only something that's a chatzicha, it's not kedarka. I'm not going into that now. Halacha l'maisa, we have two basic shitas. The Rosh and the Mechaber say that the heter is because it's abnormal, unusual. Rashi and Tosos, and that's quoted by the Bach in the Shach here, because of Bach Tzorach Iyan, etc., in the Shach, Sukkot and Ches, say, no, it's mutter because of Chatzitza. Then you ask, well, what about the dam and the cracks of the Chaticha? The dam and the cracks of the Chaticha, it could touch her body on the way out, right? Because here's the Chaticha with a little crack. And it's full of dam. Let's make it a very little crack. And it's full of dam. And this dam could touch your body on the way out. So Rashi would say that's mutter for a different reason, because it's not dam nid, it's just bleeding of chatifa. And Tosfos say taka in a panami, that's usser. But it doesn't matter. I don't think that really happens too much. But that's the basic machlokas. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the heter shofar is because of lo kedarka, not because of chatzitza. That's, again, Lokidarka, the Rush, Tor, Mechaber, as opposed to Chatzitza, which is Rashi, Tosos, and the Bach. And it seems to be the Shach also, you know, has some level of approval of this Bach. What's the Nafkamina? This itself gets complicated, but the Nafkamina is the continuation. What does the Rush say? He quotes from the Rash of Shimshon, I guess the Rash of Shans. Says, and Rav Shimshon did a maisa based on this pshat. Is the nafkamina is any time down from that lokadarka, can you say the woman's okay? So he says yes. What was the maisa? Now, if you knew what this maisa was, be good shape. V'chein isha shenekar mokar shlo kemin chatichos baser nofum v'esachitzon tahora. If a woman's uterus was uprooted, came out, and like little pieces of flesh fell into the v'esachitzon, the Beis Achitzon being, I guess, what we nicknamed the Oso Mako, then she is Tahora. Now, what exactly did he mean by this? So, what exactly did he mean? And then, let's continue, although, says, V'hu shehita l'chatichos b'ayim poshim v'lo nimochu. That's only if you soaked it in warm water and the pieces didn't melt, because then it shows they're really flesh and it's abnormal. If you soak them in warm water and they melt, then they're just numb, they got dry. That's normal. And then he adds, okay, we'll get to the end. The somehow the Rosh Rishon says because of the heter lo kedarka, in this case of nekar harechem, we can be makel. The problem is no one knows what the case of nekar harechem means or what actually happened or what he was makel. That's where it gets very, very confusing, although the later Achronim have a fairly strong theory. But what actually is this case? What is Nekar HaRechem? Why did her uterus fall apart? And what actually happened? And what was the Shaila? And what was the Rosh Mishan's make? So, don't ask me to explain all the Shitas very well. But let's try to get some of the Shitas. One is the Beis Yosef's interpretation, which I assume is what he means here in the Mechaber. He says, this was just a case of Chaticha Mivuka'as with Dam Nida inside. That was the case, just Yatsu chatichos mivukaos v'damnida bivikaim. It was similar to what the Mechaber said previously. Little chunks of flesh fell out because her uterus disintegrated. Don't ask me to explain medically how that could happen, but maybe it could happen in days when their medical care was so, so poor. Maybe very terrible things like this could happen. You ever hear of people's body parts disintegrating and falling out piece by piece? Okay, you never know. We'll have a better theory later, don't worry. And little pieces of flesh came out, and those little pieces of flesh had cracks in them. And in the cracks, again, if they were hollow, you know, like gushers with Dom in the middle, then everyone would admit that's mutter, right? It's not the normal way for Dom to come out, and there's chatzitza. But no, these are cracks. The Dom touched the flesh of the opening of the rechum, the cervix on the way out. But it was a weird way for it to come out because it was stuck in the crack of a piece of flesh. And this was real Dom Nida that came out with these cracks. They knew in this symptom, it wasn't that the chaticha bled, it was real Dom Nida. So if this Dom Nida comes out in an unusual way, is it mutter or not? Any paskin that it's mutter. Or tahora, more accurately. That's the way the Beis Yosef understood it. It's not that any Dom came out. Dom came out in the chatichos of Basar that fell out.
As you said, not directly related to this, but if the chatichos come out and are covered with blood.
If the chatichos come out and are covered with blood, then he would assume, no, that the blood came out separate from the, it just coincidentally came out the same time as the chaticha. But that's considered normal blood. Even though you wouldn't think it's so normal, but still he said, since the blood's not mitzurif to the chatichah, that's normal blood.
But why, if it's that case where the blood's exposed, it's going to touch
the side. Yes, but it's still abnormal because it's folded up inside a piece of meat. But if it was like down on the outside here, then you'd say maybe coincidentally it happened to come out at the same time as the chatichah. But it could still be normal blood, so then we wouldn't be making. The Ramah...
Based on neither Rashi nor Tosas,
because Tosas says a chatich mukas is taka aser. Rashi says it's only mutter if you know that it's bleeding of the chaticha, not dam nida, which you normally do, but in this case you don't. The Ramah said no. The Ramah says he adds vafilu ras adam. No, even if mamish blood comes out, there's more of a chiddush. It's not just the case of chaticha mukas. The Ramah in the Darkei Moshe he explains it a little greater length. Even if she mamish has drops of blood coming out. That's still mutter. Calls man shechatichos veischiton shlo tahora. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean a piece falls out of the rechem, and then a month later blood comes out, obviously. But it means that if that piece is still in the beis hachitzon, and dam comes out, that's mutter. Why hold the tulina dam chatichos elu? Because we assume, what's his real chiddush, that even if blood comes out, we assume the blood came from those chatichos. Because since we totally know that her makar was nekar, her uterus was uprooted, machas maka, and it's machas maka, and it's okay. It's a little unclear exactly what the Ramah is trying to say, but I think if you look at the lashon maka, etc., what Ramah is trying to say is that yatu chatichos lebeis hachitzon. The achar kaf yotza dam. The achar kaf yotza dam. She's tahora. Why is that dam tahora? Because what kind of dam is it? Tahora mishum dam maka. After all, if her uterus is disintegrating and pieces are coming out, then b'chor, that's a pretty big maka. I mean, whatever nekar recha means, it sounds like a pretty big maka. So it's obvious this is dam from the maka. Now here's where the achronim say, but no, the logic was it's because of lo kedarka, and they have all kinds of ways of trying to figure out how to touch up the Ramah. That maybe what he means is that no, some dam came out, some there was dam nida inside them, and there's also dam maka, the dam nida in the chatichos is mutter for one reason, dam maka is mutter for another reason. Okay, they try to tie them up. The Bach says, whatever the Rush, quoting the Rosh Hashem, we don't hold like it. Because the Bach paskind that the only heter is chatzitza, but still, Torah Yulam and Atzarach, Torah Lishma, what did this nekar recha mean? So the Bach says, this is quoted by the Shach in Sifkat and Tess, he says, even though I don't hold like it, what did they mean? He says what it means is, Yatsu Chatichos, Lebeis Hachitzon, Ubadka, Velo Matzadam, Ve'acharkach, Matzadam, She is meaning first the chatichos came to Beis Achitzon. She did a bdika and there was no blood. Then blood came out. So what do we say? The blood that came out afterwards is blood that came out originally inside the chatichos and then came out of the chatichos. So tahora mishum shehadam yotza me hamakor betoch hachaticha equals lo kedarka. Meaning, what the Bach says is, if you're sure no blood came out with the chaticha, and the blood only came out after the chaticha fell, then you know what happened. The blood was originally inside the chaticha, which was lo kedarka in the cracks, and then the blood got squeezed out of the cracks of the chaticha and comes out. But we know that's a big deal, a big issue. Maybe we haven't learned this yet. That when is damnida metame? Not when it leaves the guf, when it leaves the makor. Or let's assume for now, something called Bein HaShinayim. So since it left the marker lo kedarka, even though then it got squeezed out of the chatichah and came out of the goof dripping like normal blood, doesn't matter, it left the marker so lo kedarka. That's how the Bach understands it. The Taz has a fourth shot. The Taz says, he says, for sure the Beis Yosef is wrong. It's not that only pieces came out. Blood came out. And for sure the Bach's wrong. It's not like first she checked there was no blood and later there was blood. Never say she checked. It's that chatichos came out and dam came with them. Like the Ramah says. Chatichos came out and dam came out. But the Ramah's wrong. It's not because of makah. Who said makah here? The Ramah's very dach against they're touching him up. The Taz says definitely the most pasha, best, cleanest shot in, before we get to science, cleanest shot in the words of the Rush. The Taz says, yatsu Chatichos, lebeis hachitzon, v'yotza dam, is tahora. But why? We can't prove that the dam came out inside the chatichos. Maybe the dam came out outside the chatichos. So Ramah would say, ah, it's dam maka. But he doesn't hold it's because of dam maka. Because who brought in maka here? That's the wrong sugya, wrong simon. That was last simon. So he says, tahora, Yatsa shelo kedarka, and what's his chiddush? Even though we can't prove that it was inside the chaticha. Normally, if dam comes out outside the chaticha, that's considered kedarka. Says, yeah, that's when a little chaticha comes out. But if the rechem's falling apart, if the rechem's nekar, that's automatically shelo kedarka. It's not lo kedarka because it was in a chaticha. It's lo kedarka because any akiras harechem is automatically called lo kedarka. The derech is the uterus stays where it belongs and the dam comes out. Anytime the uterus comes out, that's lo kedarka. Which is probably the pashut shot. The Taz is for sure, everyone agrees. So homach lokes, what do we do lamaisa? Yeah, but everyone agrees, in theory, for Torah lishma, the Taz is the best shot in the rush. No, the cleanest shot in the Rush. The Rush says that he meant when we said it. So lo kedarka is mutter, and he's teaching us a chiddush here. And dam really came out. And what's the chiddush? Normally, if dam comes out with the chaticha, but not stuck in the chaticha, not in the crevices, but dam comes out, that's kedarka. It was coincidence came with the chaticha. But when the rechem comes out, any dam that comes out when the rechem comes out is automatically called shelo kedarka. That's the chiddush of the Taz. That's probably the simplest pasuk shot. Now the question becomes, has anyone ever heard of a uterus disintegrating and coming out? So, I hope you'll say no. But yet, if you look at the Pesukei Tshuva here in Sukkot and Zion, he says, I am inyan zeh, and I can't read it all because he just quotes I am inyan zeh in these 50 simonim of Gedolei Achronim who dealt with it, and it's such a difficult inyan that lo nitan reshos chomor lifsek adin zeki in Gedolei Ador. Only Gedolei Ador can pass this difficult inyan. Okay, what's the difficult inyan that only Gedolei Ador can pass? Don't tell me disintegrating uteruses that but we never even heard of or don't understand how they scientifically work. So he says, no, maybe, now this is purely academic, but there's a whole debate in the Achronim whether this is what the Taz meant or only the later Achronim said this pshat. But maybe the Taz, the question is, what's the Metzias? What's the medical Metzias? So there's two ways of understanding the medical Metzias. One is disintegrating uterus, which I'm not sure, we have a doctor here, and I don't know how often, have you ever seen a stomach disintegrate, a lung disintegrate? It seems a little funny, but that's what the Machaber sounds like. Little pieces come out, and they're on my sound, that's what they sound like. But the
this is what the Machaber sounds like, this is what Rama, etc. This is what they sound like, disintegrating uterus. However, maybe the Taz, and all the later Achronim, and the Plasi and the Yehud and the Sam Sofer and everyone, pretty much everyone listening to this Pesach Tshuva, all come up. I mean, the Plasi might have been the first to say it straight out. There's also the Sidrei Tara here. He takes a double push to the Tazman. Say, no, it's a known medical condition. It's called a prolapsed uterus. Or, in modern day Hebrew, it's called Snichat Harechem. You know, like San Chanin, something falls down. Snichat Harechem. What is Snichat Harechem? Now, this is going to sound equally fanciful and like making up something that's not Metzius, but this is Maisa Mechol Yom, that a woman's uterus can fall out into the Beis Achitzon. After a woman gets old and gives birth to many children, and the muscles that keep everything in place get very weak, it is not at all an uncommon medical problem that the uterus starts falling out through its opening, through the cervix, into the Beis Achitzon. Maybe it can even get outside her body, theoretically. You know, in a very, very terrible case. The uterus falls out. It sounds weird to us, but I'm not making it up. This is mamish, mice, and b'chol yom, the uterus falls out. It's called the prolapsed uterus. Not that pieces come out or disintegrates. Just the whole thing, you know, instead of how it's supposed to be, like here's the uterus and here's the Beis Achitzon and the uterus stays where it is. Let's color it orange. No, here's the Beis Achitzon. And the uterus starts like going like this and sticking out. It can be a problematic condition, even besides Hilchos Nida. So that, the Achronim point out, what are you talking about? The Rosh Mishantz had a case like this. I think the Rosh Mishantz had some a crazy, fantastic case that we don't understand the science, and then we don't understand Pshat. No, maybe what the Taz meant. I know the Sidrei Tara is convinced this is what the Taz meant. I saw the Sheva Levi says it isn't what the Taz meant. It's only what the Noda Yehuda, the Sam Sofer, and the Plasi and every other later Achron meant. Doesn't matter. He meant the prolapsed uterus, Maisim Cholion. Then it makes sense he would have had a shiloh like that. And what happens with the prolapsed uterus? Because the uterus is falling out, you get a lot of bleeding. Number one, because it can very easily be irritated, etc., and maybe even the dam did some, I don't know all the reasons behind it, but you'll get a lot of bleeding, and this is why is this such a big shiloh in the Achronim? Why do you need not only the whole page of footnotes in the Pesach Tshuva, but then someone to tell you it's for Gedolei Ador? Because women who had a prolapsed uterus could never go to the mikvah, because they could never get clean batikas. And then it became a very, very serious shiloh. On the one hand, there's mamish blood coming out of the rechen, out of the makor. But on the other hand, what is this woman going to do? They're going to be good for the rest of their life. So that's taka very serious shiloh, which went to the Gedolei Ador. It wasn't a pashut heter. There's mamish dam coming out of the makor. On the other hand, what are we going to do for these women? That's why it went to the Gedolei Ador. It was a very serious shiloh. Lemaisa, one of many, and I'm not going to paskin it either. Lemaisa, what did the Achronim point out, though? They say, hold on a second. This may or may not have been what the Rush meant, right? Logically, this is probably what the Rush meant. Because it seems logically you deal with a common medical condition, not with a fantastic scenario that doesn't make any sense to us. Of course, the tricky part is then why do you say, kimin chatichos baser noflin? There are many pieces of flesh falling into the Beis Achitzon. But the Gersa in the Tos, that's the Gersa in the Rush. The Gersa in the Tos, the Rush is chatichas baser. You know, like Gersa could easily be confused by a Tos. So maybe it was chatichas, one piece of flesh. What was the one piece of flesh that fell out? It was the uterus. The by the way, the Yiddish word for this, just because you'll see it all over, is I think it's called parfil or something. I have no idea what that means in Yiddish, etc. In Hebrew it's called Snichat Harechem. In English it's called prolapsed uterus. And the probable truth is, in the Rishon it was called Nekar Harechem. Even though, again, but what's the problem? When you look at the Sidrei Tara. No one on the page goes into it, but the Sidrei Tara is a very, very long essay in the back here of the Dark Bakodesh. And he says, hold on a second. If you're going to say, like, the Bach and the Shach, the Rashi and Tosfos are right, then we're stuck. There is no Heter of Lokadarga. If you're going to say there is that the Rush is right, then still, according to the Ramban, the Beis Yosef, maybe he meant something else. Only according to the Taz did he really mean this prolapsed uterus. So then it becomes a shiloh, but on the other hand, that's the best shot. So what do you do?
You have the Shulchan Aruch is willing to pass like the Rush, and the best shot in the Rush is that a prolapsed uterus is takan mutter. Why? Because it's low kedarka for the prolapsed uterus. But on the other hand, it's mamish blood coming out of the uterus, and there are other pshatim. So what do? You have to leave for Gedolei Ador to pasken these shailas, because they're very, very difficult shailas. But this is where it all comes from. Of course, halacha lemaisa nowadays, we have somewhat better medicine, so the best thing to do is to try to fix the problem. But I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to tell you, give you a diagnosis, but sometimes it can be fixed through a hysterectomy by removing the uterus entirely, which is a little radical, but since it happens to older women usually, it's not quite as radical. There's a whole halakhic shaila. Are you allowed to remove the uterus of an old lady? Is a big shaila. Or, you know, in mild cases, it can be fixed with physical therapy, strengthening muscles, etc. You know, they're all different. You know, I don't know all the different medicine, but Lamaisa obviously try to take care of it medically, but it's a very, very big shaila in the Achronim. They spilled a lot of ink on this.
With the prolapsed uterus, the blood comes from the muck.
So that's the tricky part. Where is this blood coming from? Is that the other thing I should mention? A lot of the blood might really be dam maka, from irritation of the uterus, not from dam nida of the uterus. But it's very hard to know for sure, because it could also be that, you know, that since the uterus is exposed in a way which it never was, it's hard to draw the line and tell when, you know, some irritation is making something which would halachically be considered dam nida come out, and when it's a maka. So certainly one possibility is to have an examination and paskin that it's dam maka. And then even if there is dam, it's dam maka. But it's a complicated Indian, and again, you have to, I'm not as much of a bucky in the medical science, but somehow we have to deal with it. But that's where this comes from. Lemaisa. I should just point out that the Shachim Sivkat Yud Aleph is just a Pol Yotzei this machlok, is to be Yosef, sort of a note to say, even if it's a Nekar Rechem, you have to soak the pieces of water to make sure they're not dried blood. I'm not sure it's Pol Yotzei, but he quotes our mother and says, no, they're pieces of the Rechem. Like, why should he even ever have them soaked in? Obviously, if you understand it's talking about a prolapse uterus, then pieces aren't actually coming out. They're still part of her body. So it's not really an issue. But I think the Beis Yosef was the only cool was on the piece. Said, you have to check this piece. The Ramo says, obvious amaka, etc. Said, you don't have to check the piece. We all know what medical condition this is. That's the discussion of the Shach in Sukkot Yud Aleph. The end of this, Mechaber says, a very important halacha, but we certainly don't have time to get into this now, so I'll save it for Simon Kuf Tzadi Dalid. He says, V'davki chatichos ketanos dumi d'shvoferes. Only if it's a small shloferis, a tube, or a small piece comes out. But if a big piece of flesh comes out, she's tmeya for a different reason. Then she's automatically tmeya regardless if a big piece comes out of her uterus. There's a rule. If the uterus opens, there has to be dam, even if you don't see it, and it has to be dam nida, and there's an automatic tumah, automatic tumah whenever the uterus is opened, even if it's just like a very early miscarriage. And he says, what does that mean? But you put a tube in that opens it. He says, no. A small opening is not considered psicha, only a big opening. So he says, a small opening, like the smallest tube, or a piece the size of the smallest tube, that's not considered psicha lekever. But if something bigger than the smallest tube came out, she'd be tummy because of psicha lekever, which is a totally different opinion, which we'll come back to in some kufsadi
knowledge. If the tube pointed, even if it's a bigger tube, it opens it further.
I hear that. Maybe, I'm not sure. We'll have to think about that. Lamaisa, okay, I'm not going to get into Rosh Hashanah Zalman's tube and the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Just very, very briefly, I'll mention very briefly. Rosh Hashanah Zalman is a piece I think is in the Mechah Shlomo Tinyana, Simon Ayin Beis, or it was published a few places before that. What to do with women who ovulate before they can count Shivan Nekiyim? And he didn't like this Rav Gusman idea of not counting. Doing away with Shivan Nekiyim, said, just put a tube in, let all the dam come out through a tube, and it'll be okay. And then they'll never be nida. So he says, that sounds like it should work. It's low kedarka, and it's a chatzitza. Everyone should agree it works. Great, we've solved the problem. Without getting how practical it is. But I guess if he really wants to, maybe you could do it. I don't know. But then he pointed out, no, there's a Shulchan Aruch Harav has an interesting touch, which seems to be against what most people assume. What does it mean, low kedarka? I think most people assume means the dam came out in an abnormal way. Shulchan Aruch says, no, it's only low kedarka if the dam was created in an abnormal way. Like you stuck in the tube and knocked off some dam with a tube. But if the dam was created in the normal way of menstruation, it just came out through a tube, That's considered kadarka. And then he says, oh, but according to Shulchan Aruch Rav, my idea doesn't work because the Dhamma was created in the normal way. That's I don't think that most people care how it was created. Maybe most people care how the Dham was, how the Dham, not to mention, I'm not sure about the Katsiyas of Shulchan Aruch Rav's idea, how the Dham came out. But therefore he said, you know what, but it doesn't matter. I'll still require her to wait 7 days and go to mikvah. So even if the Shulchan Aruch Rav's right, she'll still be okay with the rice, I'm just not going to require Shev and Nikiyim. So they didn't come to Rabbi Zeira. You can rely on not the Shulchan Aruch Rav, and he suggested this, but no one ever did it. But it's a very fascinating Indian. It's a great article to read. It has really a lot of very sophisticated Indian. Okay, very, very briefly. Dalid, the rest of this is pretty pashut. Kol Dama Yotzim and Isha Bein Lachman Yavash Tmeya. It's a din. Don't think it has to be liquid to be a Haloshim Dam. Even dry blood is a Haloshim Dam. Blood El Afilu Yotzim and Tsuras Biryakman Klipos Yumin Saras. Even if like a little peel, meaning a little two-dimensional tiny surface, or saras, a little one-dimensional string. Even if a string or just a surface of a two-dimensional peel of dam came out of her, okemi yevchushin adumin, or like little some sort of bugs of some sort that are red, tmeya, she's tmeya if they're really dam. Oh, but if a red solid came out of her, how do we know if it was really dam, if it was really something else? If you soak it in warm water for 24 hours and it melts, that shows it's really dam. If you soak it in warm water for 24 hours and it doesn't melt, that shows it's really something else. And that's how you can tell the difference between dried blood and other things. But what counts as warm? What counts as warm water? You drew it from a well or a river in the summer and then put it in the house, which makes it a little hotter because the house is insulated a little. And any season, even in the winter, it has to be that hot. Ah, that's a very non-useful gether. So no problem. The Ramah says, the potion is certainly not hotter than saliva. Saliva, I believe, is body temperature. So what he's saying is if it's body temperature, you're on the safe side. For sure, it doesn't need to be hotter than body temperature, so as long as you make it 98.6 or whatever they say, 37, however many degrees, then you're okay. If they're so hard, they don't melt in 24 hours, she's okay. Even if you could squish them with your fingernail, but if they don't melt in water, then they're not dried blood. But of course, we see from here that squishing with a fingernail is a stronger force than soaking. And therefore, we say, Kal v'chomer. If even some things which are hard enough to withstand 24 hours won't withstand a fingernail. But Kal v'chomer, if you can squeeze it with your fingernail and it won't melt, Kal v'chomer, wouldn't it melt in 24 hours? And if you want to not be exact, but you want to like seed a little extra territory, you could use that test and it won't take 24 hours. Okay, I don't think this happens very much nowadays. Hey, v'medvar m'rishim loni mochtorim nanshim yibeshim gemurim she'inimam dam klalo yeshim am shum lechluach dam tem meya. When do we say that if a thing comes out that doesn't melt, she's okay if there's no blood with it? But if there's dam with it, she's tameya. And we don't call this lo kadarka. It's only like kadarka if there's dam inside the solid. But if there's dam on the surface of the solid, we say the dam came out separate and the solid came out separate. And that's considered kadarka, at least if that solid thing was not her uterus. And therefore also, the Ramah says, logically, v'hu adin, in this machloni mochel ketsasim sasloni mochel tmeya. If part of it melts and part of it doesn't, then part of it's dam. So the dam is metami her. Miu nirolidim budka shlos shalos for amen kol masharasa loni mochel klal shovein and tzricha livdos mashi ro acharka derech zeh. Shari hufsu yashid var melo inam dam rak bar mi makshiv gufa. If she has little red solids coming out and she checks them three times and discovers they're not dried blood, then it's chazaka that these things come out of her body and they're a maka. They're not dried blood. She doesn't have to check them anymore. But if we're relying on a maki, he says, Davka, if it's Shalom B'Shas Vesta, we can rely on this. The Shach of the Tema, he says, what are you talking about? We're not going to say Tarek is a maki, we're going to say it's not blood. If it's not blood, then why do you say only the Tarek is a Vesta, since it's not Shas Vesta? So Shalom answers, if you tested it, it's not blood, it's always Tamar. But the Rama says, if you want to rely on the three times Tadaka, you can only rely on that. If she is a Vesta, and it's Shalom B'Shas Vesta. Okay, this seder sevav a medvar munchzok dika b'shriya b'mav helps me klipos v'saros avol chatichas dam apish akosh v'ini nimoch tmeya. When do you do this test to see if it'll melt or not? If it's a funny shape, like a two-dimensional surface klipos or a one-dimensional string saros, but a chunk of red dam, then no matter how hard it is, it's considered halachli dam, If it's a chunk of dam, that's considered dam, and it's always tomato. Some people say that no, even if it's just a chunk of dam, if it won't melt, it's not halachically considered dam. That is the machlokas. What if you have a chunk, not a three-dimensional chunk? Do you also do the test, or do you say that's automatically dam? And we are machmir, the shach, like the first day, if it's a chunk, that's automatically dam, and we're never mako, only if it's a two-dimensional or one-dimensional surface, then we can be mako based on this test. And of course, the last comment is, this is all if it's no bigger than a tiny tube. Anything that's bigger than a smaller than the tiniest tube, it doesn't matter, because im psichos kevlo dam, there's automatically an assumption of dam, and she became anyway, which we'll have to get back to. Okay, we'll pick up next time with Hashem, with Simon, Tuf Pei test. No, that was a chatzichas.